You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for seafood prices, news, and data. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione. Before we dive in, a quick shout out to our sponsor, Wise Fish. With over 30 years in the seafood industry, they're powering aquaculture, fisheries, processors, and seafood sales with one integrated platform that makes managing complex operations simpler. Check them out at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent.
So where in the world is Undercurrent News? This week, Undercurrent News Editor-in-Chief Tom Seaman and reporter Jacob Resnick were in Seattle, Washington for the annual Association of Genuine Alaska Pollock Producers meeting. Unfortunately, due to time constraints, we weren't able to catch up with them for this episode.
But don't worry, we'll get them back on next week. But this week, we're excited to hear from Undercurrent's Maddie Marighetti and Maria Fejo, who reported from the World Tuna Conference in Vigo, Spain, which took place September 11th through the 12th. Maddie and Maria will be joining us in the second half of the pod to share some of their highlights from the event, so stick around for that.
For now, let's kick off with some of the big headlines from the week, like the rescue of a Circle Seafoods barge that broke its mooring on Monday amid heavy winds around Annette Island near the southern tip of Southeast Alaska. The National Weather Service issued a high wind watch for the area, with winds expected between 25 to 35 miles per hour and possible gusts up to 60 miles per hour. The bulletin warned that high winds could blow around unsecured objects and damage property. And sure enough, according to a series of public notices, the stormy weather caused the 382-foot freezer barge to break free. Fortunately, less than 4 hours later, a pair of tugboats had attached moor lines and were towing the unmanned barge to a sheltered location. There were no reported injuries. An Undercurrent reporter, Jacob Resnick, spoke to Circle Seafood's co-founder, Aaron Schultz, who said that the barge's crew and processing workers had safely left the vessel before it broke free. He also added that based on visual inspections from the tug crews, it does not appear to be taking on water. The barge, which freezes pink salmon, is in its first season and has a cold storage capacity of around 10 million pounds.
And that sounds like an exciting first season for it. Check the show notes for a link for the full story. Meanwhile, an upcoming U.S. ban on fisheries determined to be out of compliance with the U.S. Marine Mammals Protection Act is still top of mind for dozens of seafood exporting nations. Undercurrent editorial director Cliff White reported in late August that products from as many as 178 fisheries that NOAA Fisheries has listed as out of compliance with the law will not be permitted to enter the U.S. beginning January 1st of 2026. The ban extends to seafood that's processed and re-exported by third nations, a NOAA spokesperson confirmed to Undercurrent. NOAA Fisheries Public Affairs Team Lead Rachel Hager told UCN that National Marine Fisheries Service is working with U.S. Customs and Border Protection to enforce the seafood import restrictions upon entry into the United States. Further, the earliest countries with banned fisheries can reapply for a positive comparability finding is after January 1, 2026, the date the ban goes into effect. In total, the new regulation, which NMFS was forced to impose as part of a January 2025 court settlement with conservative groups, is expected to upend some $3.6 billion of the U.S.'s roughly $25.8 billion in annual seafood imports.
Some of the U.S.'s top suppliers impacted include Chile, which is the U.S.'s second most valuable source of seafood at 286,000 metric tons, worth nearly $3.1 billion in 2024. Chile, which has two fisheries impacted by the bans, longline and gillnet fisheries targeting jack and chub mackerel and hake. Our pal Cliff crunched the numbers, and Chile's total U.S. mackerel exports surpassed $3.5 million in value in 2024. Its hake and whiting exports exceeded $4.2 million. He said it's not clear how much of this product will be blocked by the U.S.'s ban on fisheries. But also important to note is that it's a relatively minor total impact on the country's overall U.S. seafood exports, which are overwhelmingly comprised of farm salmon.
Indonesia, which has a huge swimming crab export business to the U.S., is another one set to be slammed by NOAA's ban on its gillnet and entangling net crab fishery. Of that country's 217,121 tons of seafood worth $1.9 billion that was exported to the U.S. in 2024, ranking it fourth most valuable, crab meat accounted for $242.4 million. And that's not Indonesia's only fishery to be impacted. You'll have to check Cliff's story to see what else. Vietnam is another country set to be hit by the ban. In a statement, the Vietnam Association of Seafood Exporters and Producers said the ban will impact nearly $512 million worth of its exports, including tuna, crab meat, mackerel, and mahi.
And you can't forget about Ecuador, which will have its gillnet and entangling net fishery banned. The fishery targets skipjack, big eye, and yellowfin tuna and mahi, among others. I highly recommend you check out Cliff's deep dive into NOAA's marine mammal-related fisheries bans, and again, link is in the show notes. Now moving along, Canada's Highlander Foods remains on the lookout for mergers and acquisitions that can strengthen its supply chain long-term and make an immediate impact on its sales. And that's after it acquired U.S. retail brands Mrs. Paul's and Vandekamp's from Conagra Brands this summer at the adjusted purchase price of $42.4 million.
CEO Paul Jewer told Undercurrent News during an interview at the recent Aquanor show that the company is happy with the investments it's made so far and that the real focus now will be looking at ways that the company will grow its business immediately. He said the Conagra deal fits well into that and that Highlander is very open to more deals like that. UCN's Neil Ramson has the full story. Check it out in the show notes.
Aquaculture is evolving fast, and managing fish farming alongside processing, sales, and logistics means handling complex data daily. WiseFish offers an integrated platform built specifically for aquaculture and seafood businesses. It collects data from farms, linking biological and financial insights so you can track costs and yields clearly. This system captures, for example, feed and medication usage, biomass increase, mortality, labor and equipment costs to give a full picture of profitability. It also supports planning across harvest, sales, and deliveries, helping you make smarter decisions with accurate, up-to-date information. By replacing spreadsheets and siloed systems, WiseFish reduces manual work and errors, freeing time to focus on growth. Whether scaling or optimizing workflows, WiseFish helps improve efficiency and control costs without disrupting your existing systems. Learn more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent. All right, let's welcome some Undercurrent friends on to talk about what's going on in the markets. Ben Fisher, we haven't had the pleasure of sharing the mic with you in some weeks. What's going on in your markets?
Well, the wild salmon market continues to be hot. We discussed the lackluster pink salmon catch a few weeks ago, but now that the commercial Alaska season is wrapped up, we know from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute's harvest reports that actually none of the five species hit their preseason harvest targets this year. Even sockeye, which saw a very impressive run in Bristol Bay, fell a couple percentage points short of the annual projection. At this point of the year, as fresh salmon becomes increasingly difficult to find, the remaining species which are out there are coming up a bit in price. So we reflected a small rise in fresh coho and king pricing. And now that the commercial season in Alaska is done, what does that mean for frozen volumes? It means that all of the species are in very high demand. For example, this is the case to such a degree that it appears there's just no 2 to 4 pound sockeye on the spot market. So we temporarily removed that price a few weeks ago on Undercurrent's wild salmon price assessment. And you know, when you're reporting a price, that says something about the market. But when you're removing a price because of no spot deals being done, even though those fish exist out there somewhere, that says something about the market as well. We received reports from contacts that some producers are beginning to allow limited amounts of frozen H&G 4 to 6 pound sockeye trickle out a little bit. So that price is there and it remains steady this week, but it's definitely higher than what it was when frozen sockeye started hitting the market. My other market, which is moving considerably and has been doing so for a few weeks now, is the Mediterranean sea bass, or Bronzino. Undercurrent tracks Bronzino from Greece and Turkey, and traditionally Greek-sourced fish has been more expensive. However, price increases by Turkish producers has brought the fish from both origins to near parity, according to one buyer in the U.S. Farmers in the Mediterranean have had to deal with heat-related mortality events for two consecutive summers now, and the 15% tariffs are being felt as well. As a result, our assessment for Bronzino has come up in recent weeks, and what used to be a somewhat affordable fresh option is less so now.
Thanks, Ben. Also joining us on the pod to share some insights into his markets is Gary Morrison. Gary, what do you got for us this week?
Well, I think we're going to start off with shrimp again. I think that's where we've been talking and focusing a lot of our time and energy here on the pod the last couple of weeks. And, you know, I'll make a brief. I mean, the market is still in the same trend. Prices in wholesale week 38 have surged again, and the cost structures are what's driving it. If you look at where prices are moving the fastest, it is still focused on the areas that U.S. consumers want. They look for convenience, they look for ease, and that means peeled shrimp and cooked and breaded. And those are the product forms that you can't really origin shop. Peeled and deveined, you do have, you know, Ecuador making a big push, but, you know, we talked about it previously, they're at capacity and they're pushing prices right up to Asian origin tariff rates. If you look at the U.S. wholesale market, P&D, 1620, Talon, both Latin origin and Asian origin, they're at parity now. So that tells you how Latin producers are pushing prices. Where people can't origin shop when you're talking cooked and breaded, the Asian origin countries are also pushing prices and pushing them fast. And the U.S. buyer is absorbing them. There is some pushback, but importers are able to sell into the rally. So it's going to be, you know, pretty consistent as cost structures rise. Cheaper inventory is being removed from the market. Prices are being raised by importers. And, you know, we'll focus quickly on, you know, the lobster meat market, because that market continues to be pretty stout as well. We entered the year with limited inventory. Landings in Maine were probably subpar, according, you know, to the boats there. And certainly Canada is not starting off as robust as they thought. So there is supply risk, and demand for lobster rolls continues to be strong. So prices are reset on a weekly basis. This week, we saw, you know, some prices edge up, but the trend is still squarely in place. The product is tight, product is wanted, and prices are moving higher.
Thanks, Gary. On my end, let's talk salmon. So the U.S. farm salmon market is caught in kind of a push and pull right now. We've got fresh prices firming and frozen values are softening and supply growth is tightening. So we're seeing seasonal disruptions, shifting trade flows, and tariff uncertainty that are all adding layers of volatility right now. So in the U.S., Chilean salmon prices firmed in week 38, reversing last week's slight dip. Fresh fillets and whole fish pricing increased on the back of the short production week during Chile's Fiestas Patrias holiday, which is curbing supply and leaving buyers with higher replacement offers. On the frozen side, the picture is softer, however. Chilean fillets ease, and we are just beginning to see some additional 6 to 8 ounce size portions becoming available and adding some downwards pressure there. However, the bulk of trade remains within the quoted range on Undercurrents Price Portal. The Norwegian salmon continues to rally, so we've got fresh whole fish gaining about 40 cents per pound this week, and that is driven by strong Chinese demand for larger fish and compounded by logistical disruptions that we've seen from recent landslides. So export volumes are lower, but average prices have risen. China is now paying premiums above 100 NOK per kilo for larger sizes. Stepping back, global output growth is slowing sharply compared to the last decade, but U.S. consumer demand remains resilient. Salmon continues to hold its unique role as both a premium and everyday protein, though producers are entering Q4 facing the twin challenges of tariffs and tightening supply.
Thanks, Lauren. And as always, links to these analysis pieces in the show notes. As promised, we've got two final UCN friends joining us on the pod, Maddie Marighetti and Maria Fejo, joining us now to share all the scoop from Vigo. Welcome, Maddie and Maria. Maddie, why don't you start off with telling us a little bit about the event you guys covered last week?
Hi, everyone. Yes, so last week, Maria and I were in Vigo to attend the Anfaco World Tuna Conference that was especially busy this year. So in addition to local executives from canneries and fishing companies, the event drew strong international participation this year with delegations from Vietnam and Thailand, Philippines, China, as well as Papua New Guinea and various Latin American countries, particularly from Ecuador. And for me, one key takeaway was the growing focus of Asian suppliers on boosting European exports, largely in response to challenges in the US market amid rising reciprocal tariffs. And the conference was not without controversy, with moments of tension reflecting the realities of an intensely competitive market.
The conference definitely had its tense moments, especially when Juan Alonso, vice president of Spanish tuna giant Gealsa, took the stage. So he actually opened with a video showing the aftermath of a massive fire that destroyed 60% of their facilities just a few years ago. And he said they thought that was the worst crisis they'd face until now. So according to him, what's coming with the new EU trade agreements, it's even more dangerous for the European tuna industry. So he directly pointed to deals with countries like Thailand, Ecuador, and Papua New Guinea, which allow them tariff-free access to the EU market, but without meeting the same labor, environmental, or regulatory standards that European producers are held to. So basically, Ecuador, for example, are processing way more tuna than they catch, and no one really knows how. So the concern isn't just about losing market share, it's about competing on completely uneven ground. So he definitely made it clear European producers aren't afraid of competition, but they want a level playing field. So his message to the EU was quite simple. If you are going to drop tariffs, then make sure everyone's following the same rules. So otherwise, he warned, this hurricane, he called it, of trade deals could do more damage than the fire that nearly wiped them out.
Well, yes. So Gealsa was referring to the free trade deal that is being negotiated between Thailand and the European Union. But Gealsa's accusation against some other of its competitors of operating under lower standards immediately prompted a firm reaction from representatives of suppliers, of tuna suppliers from Ecuador and Papua New Guinea. For example, various Ecuadorian executives highlighted the country's leadership in tuna landings across the Eastern Pacific. They stressed that between last year and this year, favorable oceanic conditions have marked by a neutral climate scenario between El Nino and La Nina have been boosting tuna availability in the region, causing record landings in Manta, Ecuador, and they highlighted their commitment to sustainability and compliance with European rules.
So to wrap up on a positive note, there's a lot of excitement about the future of the tuna industry. Roberto Alonso, Secretary General of ANFACO, pointed to a growth in places like China and Latin America. And the industry is becoming more sustainable, with most tuna stocks now being managed responsibly. Also, consumers are shifting toward healthier and more ethical products. And things like AI and digital traceability are going to help fight illegal fishing as well. And the EU's new forced labor regulations are actually seen as a chance to show leadership and build trust. So the conference ended with a call for more global cooperation and fair trade. And yeah, hopefully we'll be back in Vigo in 2027.
Yes, definitely. The conference ended on a positive note. It was highlighted that market trends show rising demand for tuna sushi and other fresh and frozen products in Spain and Europe, while canned tuna continues to expand in Latin America and the Middle East.
And actually, you ladies will be back in Vigo in a few weeks. Is that correct?
Yeah, yes. We are attending Conchamar.
And we are looking forward to it, Maria. And I feel like at home in Vigo now. We've been so many times. It's a really nice place.
So if you haven't already checked out Maria Maddie's coverage from Vigo, the Tuna Conference, we have the link in the show notes. And again, they'll be in Vigo reporting from Consumar from October 7th through the 9th. So just a few weeks away. So thanks again, ladies, for joining us. Now, before we go, some fun and light news.
Ooh, hit me.
Our pals at Echo Falls have expanded their salmon caviar product line.
Tell me more.
Let me just say one word, Lauren. Wasabi.
I'm sold.
So that's right. Capitalizing on the current flavor trend, Echo Falls is introducing a new wasabi flavored salmon caviar. Listen to this description. Developed for those consumers who enjoy complex and bold flavors, the wasabi caviar layers the rich, briny flavor of salmon roe with a fresh, clean punch of wasabi. Perfect on its own, the wasabi salmon caviar can also be incorporated as a complement or garnish in numerous appetizers or entrees, including seafood boards, poke bowls, and sushi hand rolls.
You've got their commercial right there. But that sounds awesome.
And if wasabi is not your thing, then Echo Falls still has a traditional salmon caviar. They're sold in newly designed 2-ounce retail packs, so add it to your shopping list.
And to our Listen to Us Eat
segment. There we go. And in other fun product news, Spanish group Grupo Profan, one of the largest seafood processors in the country, traditionally focused on species such as squid, octopus, shrimp, hake, and lobster, has entered the tuna sector for the first time this year with a new line of frozen products. The move comes as sales of frozen tuna products are reportedly increasing in Spain, opening new opportunities in the competitive sector. The Atune 360 range uses tuna co-products such as trimmings and small cuts, raw material which is often left outside the premium market for loins and steaks.
And the products are really unique. At the moment, the new frozen line includes fusilli pasta with tuna and Mediterranean vegetables, tuna tabbouleh with bulgur and mint, teriyaki tuna bowl with rice and vegetables, and a tuna fajita kit with marinated fish and accompaniments. Profan will target the Atune 360 range initially at European markets like Spain, Italy, France, and the UK, sourcing fish particularly from Spanish vessels, harvesting yellowfin tuna in the Atlantic and Eastern Pacific Ocean.
I want these in our grocery stores. Besides the sushi section, I can't think of a single ready-to-eat or ready-to-cook tuna option. I mean, besides...
I can't either, and all of these sound incredible.
I know. Yeah, they're different. I mean, because you have... I'm trying to think, like, you know, we do have bowls, and usually it's shrimp in, like, a pasta bowl.
Right.
Shrimp in a fajita bowl. We could go for that all day long, but it is nice to do something different. And I feel like tuna is also a fish that people are very... familiar with.
Right. And that, it's very versatile and everyone's comfortable with it.
Yeah. So. Actually, you know, my girls already started their Christmas wish list. Did your kids start doing that, Lauren?
No, not yet. Oh, gosh.
I think I'm going to start my own list this year and it's going to be a seafood wish list.
Oh, I have one. Crispy shrimp bites at McDonald's Japan.
Don't get me wrong, I love the Filet-O-Fish, but it would be so fun to have different seafood limited try offerings to try.
Agreed. And especially this one, because some lucky customers can find a heart-shaped crispy shrimp nugget. McDonald's stressed that not every box will contain a heart-shaped piece, turning it into a game of chance.
I would just keep buying and just for the chance.
I got it.
One time, okay, this is like such a silly story, but I remember as a kid getting it, yeah, I think it was from Burger King, but just getting like a thing of like the french fries, and inside was one single onion ring.
Oh yes.
And it was like
the lucky onion.
And it was like everyone was like, oh, and everyone like my entire family was like, oh my god, you got it. And it was a very exciting, and so I could
simpler times.
Yeah,
simpler,
but I could times. See the same thing happening with this heart-shaped, yes, shrimp bite. That seems like really cool, so I want it. Well, my stomach's growling, so we should probably wrap this up. From Row to Plate, Wise Fish supports seafood businesses across aquaculture, fisheries, processing, and sales with one integrated platform. Trusted by companies around the world like Tassel, Nils Spare, and others, Wise Fish helps control costs, improve margins, and enable smarter financial decisions, replacing spreadsheets and siloed systems. Learn more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent.
And see everyone back here next week for a recap of GAP's annual meeting.
Bye-bye.